I'm going to read this morning verse from Canto 3, chapter 29, and the verse number is 35. Explanation of devotional service, and a nice long purport. Fascinating. Chapter 29 comes after chapter 28. And chapter 28 is entitled Kapila's Instructions on Devotional Service, and chapter 29 is an explanation of devotional service. He really wants to talk about devotional service. Very quickly, Kapila Dev appears in the very early stages of Satya Yuga. His mother, Devahuti, is the daughter of Swayambhuva Manu. It's like really, really early. Clock just started in the reign of Swayambhuva Manu. So that's in Satya Yuga, the primary means of achieving spiritual, like our yuga, dharma, understanding, is dhyayate. It's meditation. So, Kapila Dev teaches Devahuti meditation, and we're going to hear in the purport about some of the details of what he said earlier about the process of meditation. But meditation upon what? And towards what end? In our modern times, one of the things people want a spiritual experience. They don't even know exactly what that means, but they want a spiritual experience. So they look for drugs or they look for something. And one of the things that's really very attractive about kirtan is people experience something. They don't know exactly what it is, but they like the spiritual experience of kirtan. And then, you know, from a scriptural perspective, a Srimad Bhagavatam perspective, experience of what? It's something like we discussed during the Tattva Sandarbha seminar. Similarly, there's a distinction between philosophy from the Western perspective and darshan from a Vedic perspective. The difference is, major difference, is philosophy comes from the Greek word philosophia, which means love of knowledge. And the Vedic conception of darshan is sambandha abhideya prayojana. It's standard, it's not just, you know, ISKCON jargon, it's a Vedic conception. That is to say, specifically, there's a goal or a purpose to be achieved, that's the prayojana. There's the means to achieve it, that's the abhideya, and there's a proper understanding of sambandha, which maybe philosophy is interested in. But what's the purpose of the philosophy? The purpose of the philosophy, you can say simply self-realization. Well, what's that? Well, different darshans have a different definition of what that is. What does it mean? What does self-realization mean? What does it mean to become self-realized? So an experience without philosophy, or a philosophy without experience, it's very incomplete. And that's what we're going to hear in the purport. So meditation is the process for Satya Yuga, but meditation upon what, or towards what goal? And obviously Kapila Dev is explaining in two full chapters the goal is devotional service. So it's not like in Satyayuga people didn't do devotional service. They just did meditation. Well, they may have done meditation, but if they achieved the real prayojana of meditation, it's what? It's devotional service. Meditation upon what? The Supreme. When you meditate, when you fix your mind, when you extend your consciousness and it touches the Supreme, and by mercy he reveals himself, what do? Engage in his devotional service. Bahunam jamanam ante gyanavan mam papadyate vasudev sarvamiti samahatmasadurlabha. After many, many births, when one finally comes to that position of reaching the goal, what's the prayojana? Devotional service. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvan pavartate iti madva pajante mam. What do? When you realize what's the source and cause of everything. Just like that question last night, does the Devi Bhagavat also, is it a monotheistic religion? Well, there isn't even any discussion about where everything comes from. It says, Devi's great. She has these wonderful pastimes, and she gives knowledge, and she punishes people that don't sit straight, and, she... So, line up with Devi. There must be sambandha to have proper abhideya and prayojana. So there's a purpose for the message of Devi Bhagavat, although it's an upa purana. There's a purpose in all of the Vedas. If one knows the purpose, then one can achieve the destination. And that's what's going on in this section. Very, very explicit. That the purpose of dhyayate, the purpose of that yuga dharma, is devotional service. And therefore, we can make a distinction between one and the other, and that's proper. Or we can say they're actually the same thing, and that's also proper. Like Prabhupada does in Bhagavad Gita. In a number of places, karma yoga is used interchangeably with bhakti yoga. Now there is a distinction between karma yoga and bhakti yoga. But when karma yoga reaches its fruition, its actual prayojana, then it's bhakti yoga. So a scholar might criticize Prabhupada for doing that. But if one understands the purpose he was doing that, it's perfectly proper. And especially for people of this age, his audience, so they don't get the wrong idea. There's like a menu of yogas to choose from and pick your favorite one, chocolate, vanilla, or strawberry, which is whatever else there is out there, 36 varieties. It's actually meant for one thing. So Prabhupada was helping his reader be very clear, not unclear, not confused. What's the one thing? Devotional service. Whether it's whatever the system of yoga is. Whatever the system of yoga is, that's the goal. Just like chapter 6. It's about dhyan yoga. Same thing. And what's the conclusion of dhyan yoga? By all means, Arjuna, be a yogi. And of all the yogas, there's one that's the best. And what's the one that's the best? Madgatenantaratmana shadhavan bhajateyomam. That's the best. That dhyan yoga leads to bhakti yoga, and it's like superlative bhakti yoga. Within madgatenan taratmana, within your consciousness, is fixed on the personality of Godhead, and that's the meditation part, and one engages in my devotional service. That's the best. So we're hearing exactly the same message in Kapila's instructions to Devahuti here in chapter 29, text 35. So, a little review to get to 35. Kapila Dev is describing to Devahuti, what does it look like? What does pure devotional service look like? What does, like Arjuna asked Krishna, you know, how does the self-realized person sit, walk, and speak? So he's like that. He gives it a little more detail about, and especially their internal consciousness, because internal consciousness is going to dictate how you see, how you speak, and how you act. The seat of consciousness is going to determine all the internal is going to determine the external. You know, how you interact with the world around you. The sense is extending into the field of material energy. It's based upon consciousness. And depending upon consciousness, predictably one is going to do that and one will not do that. So he's describing not just the do's and the don'ts, he's describing the consciousness. Which is very interesting. Very, very, very interesting. And it tells us, the sadhakas, that the kind of consciousness that we should aspire for. We're not there. We shouldn't feel bad that we're not there yet. But it gives us a very clear picture of what to aspire for. Not just in terms of behaviors, but in terms of consciousness, behind the behaviors. Really nice. It's very confidential, and he's disclosing it very clearly to Devahuti. I'll just read starting. We'll go back to 28. He, Kapila Dev, is doing something like with Sanatan, what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu does with Sanatan Goswami. There's living entity. Because he's already discussed that or disclosed that in the Sankhya section, chapter 26. So we're way over here in chapter 29. But in 26, Sankhya tells us there's the soul distinct from matter. And the categories of matter look like this, and the soul is distinct. And we belong to the category of spirit, not matter. And the conclusion of that chapter is, as spirit soul, the mind, which is the material energy, should be directed by the intelligence, which is meant to be directed by spiritual instructions from higher authority, to direct the mind to the supreme, to the super soul. And then the following chapter, he gives a detailed explanation of how you do that, what it's like, what the life of one who does that looks like. That's the external part. Now he's giving the internal part. Okay, so with reference to those earlier descriptions, living entities are superior to inanimate objects, O Blessed Mother, and among them living entities who display life symptoms are better. Not going to read the purport. Animals with developed consciousness are better than them, and better still are those who have developed sense perception. So there's like a hierarchy of species based upon the soul and the level of consciousness of the soul. A body is awarded according to the level of consciousness of the soul. 29. Among the living entities who have developed sense perception, those who have developed the sense of taste, fish, are better than those who have developed only the sense of touch, plants. Better than them are those who have developed the sense of smell, better still, developed the sense of hearing, text 30. Better than those living entities who can perceive sound are those who can distinguish between one form or another, sight. Better than them are those who have developed upper and lower sets of teeth, like dinosaurs. And better still are those that have many legs. Better than them are the quadrupeds, and better still are the human beings. So we're getting there. Text 31. Among human beings, the society which is divided according to quality and work is best. Varnashram. And in that society, the intelligent men who are designated as brahmanas are best. The pyramid is getting narrower towards the top. Among the brahmanas, one who has studied the Vedas is the best. And among the brahmanas who have studied the Vedas, one who knows the actual purport of the Vedas is best. Getting really narrow. Better than the brahmanas who know the purport, the purpose of the Vedas, is he who can dissipate all doubts. And better than him is one who strictly follows the Brahminical principles. Better than him is one who is liberated from all material contamination. And better than him is a pure devotee who executes devotional service without expectation of reward. Therefore, I do not find a greater person than he who has no interest outside of mine, Madgatena Antaratmana, and who therefore engages and dedicates all his activities and all his life, everything unto me without cessation. Shadhavan Bhajateyomam. Text 34. That's the verse before this morning. Such a perfect devotee offers respect to every living entity. No, that this is his social conduct. Why? And then the internal. Because he is under the firm conviction that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has entered the body of every living entity as the super soul or controller. Of course, there's tons of detail about how do you do that? You know, what does it look like? Like, you know, when somebody does something that's awful or unkind or calls you a bad name or neglects you, or you know, how do you socially, how do you handle those situations? Well, if you're Krishna conscious, it's really easy. You may respond to the behavior, but your conscience doesn't get disturbed. And then this morning's verse. My dear mother, O daughter of Manu, a devotee who applies the science of devotional service and mystic yoga in this way can achieve the abode of the Supreme Person, that's the Prayojana part, simply by that devotional service, that's the Abhideya part. If we had more time, I would tell, there's two very nice passages, I like very much from Srimad Bhagavatam that indicate three elements that are very important for one who is aspiring for going back to Godhead, or you know, like diminishing implication in this network of chaos in the material existence and elevation of consciousness towards Krishna consciousness. It's the mind going to the Supreme Lord, or consciousness reaching towards the Supreme Lord. It's the association of devotees who those who are inclined to hear and chant topics about Krishna or Vishnu or the Supreme Lord, through, you know, immerse oneself in that kind of association, sound vibration, with persons who like those kinds of activities. And the third is having friendly relations. Bhagavatam uses that language, or a warm regard towards all living entities. That's pretty big. Warm regard, friendly regard towards all living entities. And by the way, those of you that are from India, you may not know this, but that's one of the main teachings that Christ gave. There's a little, this is a little over here on the side, a biblical New Testament teaching that I grew up with and couldn't figure out, struggled with it. There's a passage in the New Testament where it's called the Sermon of the Mount, and Christ was with his disciples and they went somewhere and they started asking him questions, and his answers are then, you know, written, however accurately or inaccurately or changed over time. The question was, you gave so many teachings, what's the essence of all those teachings? Good question. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya asked a similar question of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So the answer that Christ gave was, the essence is, love God with all your heart, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. Not just, you know, one, but two. Or not just two, but one and two. So it's how we regard the Supreme and how we relate to others. And I really struggled with the second one. And, you know, as a little kid growing up in America, my thought process was, there's a lot of people that do, you know, unlovable things. And I don't love them. But I'm told that that's the core teaching of Christ, and I'm a failure. Now, how are you supposed to do that? Or how, even if you're like good, how do you love these people that do these awful things? I struggled with it. I threw my hands up in the air and just said, I don't know how to do it. It's not a different teaching. It's the teaching of bhakti. It's the teaching of bhakti, and the teaching of bhakti is you have to have proper regard for other living entities, because he is under the firm conviction that the super soul, Supreme Personality Godhead, has entered the body of every living entity or controller. So, you know, there you don't have to love the behavior, but the soul. And then the soul in connection to the Supreme Soul. Not only the soul, but the Supreme Soul is within the heart of that person. And although that person's behavior may be abominable, or, you know, some kind of category of not lovable, the behavior may not be lovable, but that's not the person. So that's an interesting philosophy, but when it happens, you know, some abominable behavior happens, it's hard to love the person. Or offer respect to every living entity, because we don't see the living entity as the soul, we see the living entity as the body and the behaviors and speech of the bodies. It's the practical application of this. No, the principle's not difficult when you just hear it, but to apply it, it's a little difficult. My dear mother, O daughter of Manu, a devotee who applies the science of devotional service and mystic yoga in this way can achieve the abode of the Supreme Person. So along with, you know, along with kirtan and our hearing and chanting activity, there's another, you know, something that's meant to, like, what's the purpose behind that? That's the activity. That's the abhideya. What's the purpose behind the abhideya? Well, cleansing of the consciousness, but then when as consciousness gets cleansed, what's the objective of that? And so it's see the Supreme Personality of Godhead and see the Supreme Personality of Godhead within the heart of other living entities and have due regard and respect for them because of that. It's an application point of teachings. The teachings are meant to do, you know, self-realization. That's without the objective, then it's not Vedic. Just simply not Vedic. And supposing one doesn't have proper guidance as to the objective, or even more extreme, one has wrong guidance. And that's what Prabhupada discusses in the purport. That is, you know, people that do the meditation part but don't get the devotional service part. Or meditation on nothing. Or meditation on that which has no qualities, that which has no form, that which has no, you know, no name. Like chapter 12, Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna, it's not a new thing. This is Satya Yuga. And, you know, Krishna speaking Bhagavad Gita is in Dwarpa Yuga. And it's Kali Yuga. The things are even more confused. But the principle doesn't change. Meditation upon what? Same as, you know, from the chapter 27. So let's read the purport. Prabhupada is very clear about it. Herein, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Kapiladeva, perfectly explains that the mystic yoga system, the Sanskrit of the first line, bhakti yogash cha, yogash cha, maya manavyadhirataha. So, bhakti yoga and mystic yoga cha, maya, O daughter of Manu, I have described all this. So the indication is the two go together. The dhyan yoga, or the process for spiritual perfection and satya yoga, is meant by the propounder of the process of meditation, is meant to bring one to bhakti yoga. And if it doesn't bring one to bhakti yoga, it's incomplete. At least before you begin, you should know that's where the train is heading. Get on board. We're going to the Bhakti Yoga Loka. Get on board. So you do your meditation, fine. It leads to Bhakti Yoga. That's the destination. That's the prayojana. And then, you know, with some adjectives to describe that Bhakti Yoga. The mystic yoga system, consisting of 8 different kinds of yoga activities, has to be performed with the aim of coming to the perfectional stage of bhakti yoga. Conversely, it is not acceptable for one to be satisfied simply by practicing the sitting postures and thinking himself complete. Then positive. By meditation, one must attain the stage of devotional service. Then, what does that mean? As previously described, a yogi is advised to meditate on the form of Lord Vishnu. From point to point, from the ankles to the legs, to the knees, to the thighs, to the chest, to the neck, and in this way gradually up to the face, and then to the ornaments, there is no question of impersonal meditation. Paragraph. But, you know, lots of people, there's no question of personal meditation. They're you know, different ways of uncomfortable. It just you know, they can't handle it. I had this opportunity while I was in China this summer. I was a devotee, had a friend who's a millionaire Buddhist. And a millionaire Buddhist knew that her friend was a devotee. And the devotee had a spiritual master, so that millionaire Buddhist wanted to meet her spiritual master. So we had a little discussion. And I tried every which way to help this person understand, like, you know, it's just little, the principle of bhakti. Because she wanted to know, you know, what's your message? You know, bhakti is the message. And at a certain point, without all the detail, that this millionaire Buddhist said, look, I'm not gonna go there. I'm not going to think of a person and become subordinate to a person. Tell me something else. You know, what else is, what else? You know, like Patanjali Yoga Sutras. Buddhists like that system of yoga, I've come to understand from visiting China. And because, you know, there's sadhana and there's detail, like we have, it's really, really clear, really sharp, focused, clear statements of sadhana. But, you know, upon what? What's the prayojana? So there's some abhideya, but the abhideya has got to have a prayojana. Where's the train headed? Get on board. For what? Just fixing your mind on nothingness instead of somethingness. It's not new. Krishna's, you know, Arjuna asks, which is better, this one or that one? Krishna doesn't hesitate. The personal form is better. The other one's very difficult. And not only it's better because that one's more difficult, but with the bhakti process, we have Krishna's help. So which is better, your effort or your effort plus Krishna's help? But if you don't acknowledge a person, you don't get Krishna's help, and good luck. It's very difficult. In short, you're not going to get there. And whatever there is anyways, that which is without, you know, without this and without that, without that. Well, what is it? Well, it's without this, without that, without that. Well, what is it? Definition by negation. What is it? What's Brahman? What's Brahman? It's without this and without that, without that. Fix your mind on that, okay? I'm trying, but I, you know, upon what? It's not minor. You know, so the practice and, you know, the goal of the practice, that's Vedic darshan. So you need to know what the goal is. You need to know. So the Bhagavat message is that goal is Bhagavan. That makes it Bhagavat Dharma and Bhagavat Purana. Bhagavat means in relation to Bhagavan. And Bhagavan means the Supreme Person. And Supreme Person means, well, several things. But Supreme Person means, in the transcendental sense, not in the temporary, now you see it, now you don't, mundane sense, person. In fact, the material notion of person is resting upon, it's the reflection of the spiritual person. Otherwise there wouldn't be whatever, you won't find person here if there isn't person in the absolute. Logic is very simple, but there's this loathe and resistance to person, nirvishesha shunyavadi, and we meet it. Fortunately, you know, what Kapila Dev is teaching is so somebody may have that propensity, but they have to grow up or have to graduate to the bhakti principle where there is person. And one engages in service to the Supreme Person, inspired by hearing about that person in the company of personalists, in the company of devotees who are carrying bhakti for the Supreme Lord. Second of three paragraphs reads, when, by meditation on the Supreme Personality guided in all detail, one comes to the point of love of God, prayojana, that is the point of bhakti yoga. And at that point, he must actually render service to the Lord out of transcendental love. Anyone who practices yoga and comes to the point of devotional service can attain the Supreme Personality Godhead in his transcendental abode. Here it is clearly stated in the last line of the verse. Purusha Purusham Vrajet. The Purusha, the living entity, Vrajet, he goes to Purusham, the Supreme Person. Purusha Purusham. I mean, the ending Purusham indicates, you know, to. Purusha Purusham, subject object. Vrajet, the verb. One who does those things at the top, the bhakti yoga and the mystic yoga. When they do it, when they apply it properly, Purusha Purusham Vrajet. That's the objective. But you have to do the process properly. The mind must go in meditation upon the person and the features of the form, as described earlier. The Supreme Personality Godhead and the living entity are qualitatively one. Both are defined as Purusha. The quality of Purusha exists both in the Supreme Godhead and in the living entity. Purusha means, quote, enjoyer. And the spirit of enjoyment is present in both the living entity and the Supreme Lord. The difference is the quantity of enjoyment is not equal. The living entity cannot experience the same quantity of enjoyment as the Supreme Personality Godhead. An analogy can be made with a rich man and a poor man. Colon. The propensity for enjoyment is present in both, but the poor man cannot enjoy in the same quantity as the rich man. When the poor man dovetails his desires with those of the rich man, however, and when there is cooperation between the poor man and the rich man, or between the big and the small man, then the enjoyment is shared equally. That is like bhakti yoga. Prabhupada gives the example, the servant of the king and the king, they live in the same palace. The servant is enjoying the same facilities as the king. He dresses in very fine clothing because he's the servant of the king. And he eats the same food as the king. He lives in the same palace as the king. And he has that position because of his loyalty and subservience to the king. So he enjoys the level of the king, although he's in the servant position, not the king position. Purusha Purusham Vrajet, when the living entity enters into the kingdom of God and cooperates with the Supreme Lord by giving him enjoyment, he enjoys the same facility. Now he contradicts himself, he says, or the same amount of pleasure. Not same quantity. He's already said not the same quantity. On the new paragraph. On the other hand, this is the Maya Kingdom paragraph. When the living entity wants to enjoy by imitating the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his desire is called Maya. And it puts him in the material atmosphere. A living entity who wants to enjoy on his personal account and not cooperate with the Supreme Lord is engaged in materialistic life. as soon as he dovetails his enjoyment with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is engaged in spiritual life. It's exactly Vyasa's trance of meditation. He saw the living entities implicated, although they are spiritual, purushak prakriti. So, although they are spiritual by nature, they identify themselves as a product of matter, and they suffer the miseries of material existence. But he also saw the mitigating process when they turned their attention to the Supreme. So, same here. Now the example. The different limbs of the body cannot enjoy life independently. They must cooperate with the whole body and supply food to the stomach. In so doing, all the different parts of the body enjoy equally in cooperation with the whole body. That is the philosophy of Achintya Bheda Bheda. Interesting presentation of the philosophy. The part is meant to cooperate with the whole. Anyway. The living entity cannot enjoy life in opposition to the Supreme Lord. He has to dovetail his activities with the Lord by practicing bhakti yoga, even if he's a really super duper, you know, mystic yoga practitioner. Last paragraph. It is said herein that one can approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead by either the yoga process or the bhakti yoga process. This indicates that factually there's no difference. You know, there's some difference and there's not some difference. Because one can do the Ashtanga yoga and not become a bhakti yoga, and there's bhakti yogi. But when they're connected, there's no difference. That is to say, what Kapila Dev is teaching Devahuti as the, you know, yoga avatar, he's in that position, he's taking that position. He's teaching the meditation process for that age, but it leads to bhakti yoga when done properly. And that's what the verse is indicating. This indicates that factually there's no difference between yoga and bhakti yoga because the target of both is Vishnu. However, in the modern age, a yoga process has been manufactured, which aids at something void and impersonal. Actually, yoga means meditation on the form of Lord Vishnu. If the yoga practice is actually performed according to the standard direction, there is no difference between yoga and bhakti yoga. Difference and no difference. Like karma yoga and bhakti yoga, or dhyan yoga and bhakti yoga, or ashtanga yoga and bhakti yoga, hatha yoga and bhakti yoga. If one understands the purpose behind it, it leads to that position. Okay, so see if there's any discussion or questions.
Just on the last point you have mentioned, Prabhupada writes here, there is no difference between yoga and bhakti yoga, if one understands Vishnu, Supreme Lord.
In the sense that they have the same target, Vishnu.
Right, but bhakti yoga, usually Prabhupada translates it as devotional service, which means there is the devotee and there is Krishna and there is a transfer of service.
Yes.
In yoga, there is more of a recognition that Krishna or Vishnu is the...
So what you're stating is absolutely correct. I'll just add to it. Translators that aren't Prabhupada, they commonly translate bhakti as devotion. And that's like, you know, something you feel. But Prabhupada translated as devotional service. It's something that you do with feeling. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam. That's what bhakti is. And Ashtanga yoga, or the yoga, you know, yoga process, does not necessarily lead to devotional service. It's something that may or may not lead to devotional service. So, again, just to repeat the same message as I've been saying for the entire class, when that immature stage is properly guided and becomes matured, it is a subset of devotional service. It can lead to devotional service, or you can say it the other way. A devotee, a mature devotee, is engaged in yoga. And the other way. The mature stage of yoga is madgate nantaratmana shradhavan vajate yomam, not just the madgate nantaratmana part, but it leads to devotional service. Immature leads to mature. If the green mango stays on the branch, it's likely to become a ripe mango. That's the meaning. They're the same. There's difference. They're the same. In the mature stage, properly guided, that's where it goes. Like, just like what Kapila Dev is teaching to Devahuti.
Would it be something similar like Dhruva Maharaj, where he was in Ashtanga Yoga?
Yes, but at the same time, his meditation, he was engaged in Ashtanga Yoga, but who was he meditating upon? And he was chanting a particular mantra to help him. And he had, as a guru, an empowered incarnation of the Supreme Lord giving bhakti. So the external was really severe austerities and meditation. Bhakti was the seed that grew, and that displaced a lot of things, including his material motivation for meditating on Vishnu. Yes? Is it possible for anyone to do what?
To be spiritually successful.
To be spiritually successful?
Without understanding the philosophy behind it.
Without understanding the philosophy of?
Entire philosophy.
The entire philosophy. Well, Haridas Thakur says, there must be, accompanying the process, there must be sambandh again. Now, if you use the adjective entire philosophy, it's not that you can't go back to Godhead if you don't understand Canto 5 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Because who understands Canto 5 of Srimad Bhagavatam anyways? That's part of the entire philosophy. But the principle that must be understood is there's a source of everything. And the source of everything is supremely intelligent and has made accommodation for all varieties of living entities within creation. So that much. The source of everything, that there is a source of everything, and that source of everything is Bhagavan, the Supreme Person. That's necessary. The essences must be, as you say, the entire philosophy, that the essence of the philosophy must be understood. It can be very simple. Very simple.
Happened to get the darshan of Vishnu without any knowledge of all the knowledge of.
Well, that's an interesting assumption. He was a little boy, and it's not like Narada gave him detailed Srimad Bhagavatam classes, or we'll say Gopal Kumar. He didn't get, but he got realization as he went along. He got help as he went along. And good point. You know, the conclusion of Dhruva's meditation was he received the mercy of Lord Vishnu, and he didn't understand the entirety of the philosophy, but he understood the basics of the philosophy. You know, in a nutshell, from his mother. So Niti said, the Supreme Person, Lord Vishnu, he's the source of everything, and if you get his favor, he can give you anything. And she, it wasn't a long Bhagavatam class, but you know, the essence is there. Now, if the essence is all that we need, then why go through all this rigmarole? Just do the essence. Because it nourishes the essence. The purpose of hearing about Lord Vishnu or Lord Krishna is it nourishes our faith in him. It gives us a deeper understanding of him. It helps reveal his glories and inspires the surrender to him. But the essence is the surrender to him because he's the source of everything. What do you think?
Actually, spiritual success for him, Lord Vishnu touched the Dhruva Maharaj with his conscience, then he got all knowledge of scriptures and he was able to glorify Lord Vishnu when he appeared.
Yeah, the details, if I've understood correctly what you're saying, when Lord Vishnu touched his head with conch, he was then gifted with the ability to speak very beautifully. And he hadn't even gone to school and studied Bhagavatam or studied scripture. Just a little boy. Is that what your point is? Is that your point?
My question is like, spiritual success means he's going back to God, like he succeeded spiritually after, at the end of his life, he went to God, back to God along with his mother. Is it a success or getting a darshan of Vishnu or getting...
Coming to the stage of pure devotion is success. Whatever else happens, that's in the Lord's hand. His darshan, taking him back to Godhead, whatever. The goal is not going somewhere. The goal is the consciousness of pure devotion. And then the Lord can do with one whatever he likes. The goal is pure devotion. The means is the activities of, and the goal is... So the aspiration of a pure devotee is to be engaged in the Lord's service. Now, he certainly wants to be in his presence, but if the Lord desires that he, you know, like Hanuman, serve somewhere else, apparently not in his presence, he just wants to serve. That's the pure devotion. That's the goal. So the success of spiritual life is not these other things. It's fantastic. And the Lord's mercy is coming in this form, that form, the other form. But that's not your same initial question. The initial question is, when, is it essential that one understands the entirety of the philosophy? And it, so the answer is, in detail, no. But you know, in principle, yes. Sambandhagyan is essential. Otherwise, you can have the right process and you won't get the result. That's what Haridas says. It's essential. And there's reasons why it's essential. You know, there's obstacles. Anyway, it's a long discussion. But there are things that... There are anarthas that arise in the heart, and anarthas blocks mercy. There's anarthas that arise in the heart from misconceptions, even maybe doing the activity. But if you have a misconception, you're not going to hit the target. So, the Supreme Lord, through his representatives or agents or come himself, can redirect attention to the, you know, remove the anartha that blocks the darshan of the Lord or the proper conception and relationship with the Lord. That's what Sambandhagyan helps, gives the proper conception, to remove that ignorance. Are you okay?
Yes.
Okay.
Guruji, I have two questions.
Yeah.
The first is at the beginning of class, you were talking about how internal consciousness comes out externally.
Mm.
And I was thinking of the presentation on Vichasara yesterday.
Mm.
And also during Tattvasandarbha seminar, you were speaking on Shankaracharya.
Mm.
And so I was wondering, like, with these two and more examples, when they're apparently behaving externally, not Krishna conscious, are they approaching that as a service?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. That there's Bhagavad Gita chapter 13, I think it's verse 22. Purusha Prakriti Stohi Bhunkte Prakriti Jan Gunan. In the purport, Prabhupada explains, when the living entity gets a body, they behave according to the embodiment. So a living entity may get the body of a dog and they'll do what dogs do because they have the body of a dog. They'll bark and wag their tail and chew on bones and do things that dogs do because they have the body of a dog. And when they get body of a king, they sit on a throne and, you know, behave like a king. Same soul. So embodiment, the point is, it dictates, behaviors. So Vritrasura had the body of a demon. It was the intention of Trashta to have a son or to have a create a being that would, you know, do certain things. By his brahminical power, he didn't have to kill Indra in retaliation for the death of his son, the murder of his son. He created a demon that would do that. So now here's Vritrasura in the body of a demon, although his consciousness is not that of a demon. But his consciousness was doing what he was doing in devotion for the Supreme Lord and hankering all the while to be with the Supreme Lord, get rid of this body. And the way to get rid of it, Lord Vishnu had supplied. So he was very happy. But the deeper is consciousness and the behavior. Yeah, the embodiment of being the enemy of Indra, it was just doing it as a service. You know, in part to glorify the Supreme Lord and to free him from his body. I mean, he could have like very meekly gone to Indra and said, I have a good idea. Just use that thunderbolt and kill me, please. But you know, he had some other thing to do, another service to do. Act as the enemy of Indra. So he did. It's quite unusual. Most people who are in those positions don't have such consciousness, and that's why it stimulated the question from Maharaj Parikshit. Who is this person? How did he get there? So it's unusual. And similarly with Shankaracharya, it's most unusual. Buddha similarly, most unusual. But these are activities of devotees of the Lord or even forms of the Lord in the case of Buddha or incarnations, empowered incarnations of the Lord to act for a certain purpose. That is service. It's the exception, it's not the rule.
And my second question was a clarification. In the purport, it says that when one comes to the point of God, at that point he must actually render service to the Lord out of transcendental love.
Mm.
So it sounds like it says when one comes to Prayojana, then he engages in Abhideya.
No. It's when that stage of the practice becomes matured, there's no question of no devotional service or, you know, merging or something or other. There's no question of that. Now, prior to that, there's a cultivation. But when the stage of mind is fixed, there must be devotional service. There must be. That's the message. In fact, that's a symptom of the mature stage, as devotional service is manifest. Yes?
Very much. You mentioned earlier that identifying with the soul and not identifying with the behavior.
Mm.
But from where I am, that looks like a very high platform.
Mm.
And two-part of question is one, like yesterday you mentioned Apichetsu Buddhacharo. So I'm thinking, like, is that one of the ways that we look at things in the interim, like in the meanwhile period?
It's not just an interim. That's also high.
Because then
if somebody does durachar, to see that person that does durachar as sadhu, that's pretty high.
I'm not talking necessarily as a sadhu, but just in case, like, oh, Krishna will take care of it.
Okay, well, that's something else. But this is, you should see that person as a sadhu, not Krishna's going to take care of them. They're going to get theirs. That's a different way of looking at the thing than that person is a sadhu. And then that means at the person who's a sadhu, you have at least internally a certain regard for that person who's a sadhu. And the just a comment on from where I am that looks high. Well, transcendental knowledge is meant to elevate us from low. And even if it's like incrementally, but still, it's meant to elevate us. Just even hearing it, then, okay, then I heard it, now how do I apply it? Well, you cultivate applying it. And it's similar to that struggle that I had when I was young. You know, how do I love people that are doing unlovable things? Same. You know, just we're a little older now. It's the same struggle. And it's separating the behavior from the person. The person is not the behavior. It's the difference between transcendental knowledge and the mundane conception of life. Minus transcendental knowledge, there's the mundane conception of life. The person is the behavior. And I have feelings towards the behavior, and that's me. I have my feelings. Transcendental knowledge is meant to elevate us above both positions, seeing others and seeing ourselves. It's preliminary. And it can come about by proper devotional practice, but proper devotional practice is going to be blocked by ignorance. Devotional practice is going to be blocked by ignorance. Anarthas, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, arise, that's one of the main sources, is arising from ignorance. And ignorance has its subdivisions. You know, we're in prison. There's you know, iron bars and by our own ignorance. And transcendental knowledge relieves that ignorance. So it's at least it's something that we, while doing our devotional practice, we must cultivate adopting, or exactly in the language, you know, one who applies this process of devotional service, you can get out of prison. Get out of that limited consciousness, that lower consciousness, and come to the higher consciousness. So it's good to know, you know, from where I stand that looks high, to know, you know, where we are, but also the next is faith in the process of hearing that can elevate us above that consciousness and apply with faith that principle. Then where is it going to take me? Purusham, Purusha, Purusham Vrajet. It's good for me to cultivate like that and apply this as best I can. I see your hand. I just want to see if there's others that want to say something. Anyone else? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, you mentioned these three things which are the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam as the...
Well, not to the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam, but go ahead.
Or three things essential for somebody who's interested in going...
Yes.
Who's interested in achieving spiritual success.
Yes.
So, the one was having a mind which is oriented towards spiritual progress. Second was...
No.
What was the first?
The Supreme Lord, the devotees, and everyone else. How we regard the Supreme Lord, how we regard the devotees, and how we regard everybody else. The aspiration to be always engaged in devotional service to the Supreme Lord, the aspiration to be always in the association of devotees who hear and chant about Krishna or Vishnu, and to have the proper, respectful, friendly relation, regard, transcendental regard for others. Those three. Now.
So, thank you, Manoj, for correcting. So, when we see that there are obstacles in our devotional life, how do we come to know that which of these three are we lacking in? And
Well, the root of them is our regard for the Supreme Lord. But the remedy is the association of devotees.
Like this month is Prabhupada's marathon month, so Prabhupada will say stress on book distribution, developing that warm, loving attitude.
There's so many things he said. That's not an unimportant one. But it's not like if one has faith, if I just do that, fine. But don't then say, well, you're not doing that, so you don't have faith. Something that resonates, then you take shelter in. And that has something to do with the relation with the Supreme Lord. How to please the Supreme Lord, we learn from those who are very dear to the Supreme Lord. That's how we know. We have faith in that person. That person says this, so we do this with faith. But that doesn't mean if I don't do this, I'm in a doghouse. And other people that don't do this, I do this, but they don't do this, so they're in the doghouse. Something wrong with them. That's immature. You have something?
Yes.
Yes.
What should be our attitude towards the general people who are not into devotion? Proper outward.
It's right in the previous verse. Let me read it. It's like. Text 34. Such a perfect devotee, we're not perfect devotees, offers respect to every living entity because he is under the firm conviction that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has entered the body of every living entity as the super soul or controller. And then the purport. Every living entity, pandita samadarshana. Why do we see every living entity? The pandit, the learned person, sees every living entity sama, the same. Well, because their real identity is not the covering, which is different, but spirit soul. Now, spirit souls are different from one spirit soul to another, but they're spirit soul, not matter. And this adds, seeing the super soul is within that soul. That's how. And that means, to do that means that you let go of the negative. or the do not, is don't see them as the covering, and then the behaviors of the covering, the speech and activity. You can see speech and activity, and you can understand, according to Bhagavad Gita and other teachings, what is the mode of nature that that speech or activity is being conducted by. So you can discriminate through knowledge, but don't identify that that's the person. We don't have to be, you know, Pablumized milk toast, you know, viewing everyone's the same. We can see distinctions, but we also see the person. And with compassion for the person, we wish to do that which, according to whatever intelligence Super Soul gives me, how I can be best in service to that person and that person and that person and all persons, appropriate for the circumstance. Then there's like broad ones. We go on Harinam and we distribute books and we invite people to take prasadam. We give Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan. So then there's individual. Is that all right? Just, my thoughts are going to Uma sharing with me her experience of sitting in the subways in New York the other day on Harinam and watching all the reactions of all the people that were going by the Harinam party. So there's the reactions, and they're coming from a different place. This type, that type, the other type, and then, but inside, you know, the part of the elevation of consciousness of a devotee is we're not discouraged if they, you know, take their earplugs and stuff them in harder as they're passing by the Harinam party. Or, you know, just like look the other way and, or feel encouraged when they stop and, you know, they look wide-eyed and seem to appreciate and smile. We don't go through those. It's nice to see people appreciate, but it doesn't hurt if they don't. Because we know that what we're doing is even that person that's turning the other way or stuffing their earphones in harder, is they're hearing the holy name anyway. Their devotional service is beginning just by that hearing. It's the best. It's one of the best things we can do for them. And we have faith in that. And so we're serving them. Yeah? According to their position. If they have a little interest, we can serve them in another way or more. Okay. Yes?
I have a question.
Oh! My peripheral vision isn't so good this morning.
My peripheral sound is really good. So. when you mentioned about the woman in China, the millionaire woman, wanted to understand the principle of bhakti.
No, she didn't want to understand the principle of bhakti.
Oh.
In the course of the hour and a half discussion, I came to know what it was that she wanted.
What was that?
What she wanted was wisdom. And her definition of wisdom is different than mine. Her definition of wisdom is how she could become more effective in achieving her spirit of compassion. And her spirit of compassion was, make more money so I can do more charitable work. And I shared this with somebody, and they said, that's a Vaishya. A Vaishya means a business person, and a pious business person wishes to have more resource so they can do more charitable work. But, you know, so her Buddhism, actually she said, I've kind of like moved on from Buddhism. She's, I don't know what she thinks she is, but that spirit of Buddhism is, you wish, we discussed this in the Tattva Sandarbha seminar, you know, the truth for a Buddhist philosopher is establishing right conduct in all times and circumstances consistently. That's truth. So I want to be, I'm a Buddhist, I want to be situated in truth. I want wisdom that can help me be situated in right activity all times and circumstances consistently. Maybe you're a wise man, you can help me. That's what she was looking for from me.
Can I add that, that right activity, does, that's the outward manifestation?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Now, to do that consistently, Buddhism, understanding of truth, I mean, I'm not a Buddhist scholar, but this is commentary from Jiva Goswami. It requires something inside. It requires a mental discipline that where one is released from desire. You know, it's definition by negation. What's a life that's released from desire? Sounds like that's a desire. Anyway.
So I was thinking about when I first heard about bhakti, I had no clue when Nishit was talking about it. What is this? And I've been trying to think of examples in American culture where it is bhakti, but we don't know it, if there's such a thing.
What's within Christ's teachings is bhakti.
Yeah, okay. Aside from church, that's the only place I can think about it. Is.
Well, one who lives according to his teachings is performing bhakti. Mm-hmm. His teachings are bhakti. It's got a this ism or that ism or the other ism, but bhakti is a principle, it's not an ism. The form can be all kinds of forms. His teachings are teachings of bhakti. Now, how do you do it?
Well, the consciousness behind it would be the consciousness of love.
Yeah. Now, you know, then there's refinements of that. Okay, your question. Did it get answered already?
Yeah, partly, yes.
Okay.
You were saying how a devotee does not observe behaviors that are seen externally?
No, I didn't say that. We observe them, we just don't identify that's the person.
Or observe, as in, I mean to say the same thing. So I was thinking how I do it. So I was thinking, so if it's from Madhyam Adhikari, so basically the person is going into an Uttam Adhikari platform.
Well, hopefully.
So there must be an intellectual basis for that. So I was thinking.
Not intellectual. It's devotional.
For me, or for
I'm editing. Sorry, I'll let you get your whole statement out.
So I'm saying for someone like me. So if I have to. So I was thinking maybe these two things that Krishna describes in the Bhagavatam. In one place, Krishna describes Madhava Gita that the spirit soul actually is nothing to do. It's nothing to do with this material world. All activities. Are being done by the Prakriti, mm-hmm. and he's simply sleeping. And
it's not that we have nothing to do with it. I mean, sorry, I'm editing again. But, you know, he says that, then in chapter 18, he says there's five factors of action, and one is one makes him endeavor. That's what we do. We have something to do with activity. Otherwise, you take the spirit soul endeavoring out of the picture, you don't have activity. You take any one of those five out. But we're not the doer. That's what Krishna says. Prakriti is the doer. We have a role to play. We endeavor. We can endeavor to be a millionaire. It doesn't happen without sanction. We're doing something. We're endeavoring. But the fruit is not, we're doing it. We're not the doer. Prakriti is the doer. And Prakriti is under Ishwara. So those are three of the factors. Then there's other two more. We have something to do with it. We're just not the doer.
Yeah, but I meant in the sense that I'm sleeping right now, and I because of me having a perverted desire to enjoy. So Parishuddha Uddhava asked the same question: Krishna, if the jivatma is completely different from this material nature, why is he entangled? And then Krishna answers because he's wanting to enjoy.
That's why he's entangled. Exactly.
So the only mistake I understand that the jivatma does is a perverted desire to enjoy.
The mistake is turning our attention away from Krishna.
Turning away.
You can say, and that takes the form of trying to enjoy separately. So conversely, turning our attention again to Krishna means implicit, Now we'll say it explicit. It means trying to see to increase Krishna's enjoyment. Making Krishna's enjoyment the object of my desire. That's bhakti. I'm editing a whole bunch, I'm sorry.
So in one sense I was thinking, if even if I observe someone's behavior to be faulty, I mean, I thought I could recollect that statement and say, in his original Krishna consciousness is going to be perfect, but just because his moods are taking over, and he's not in control of himself, I observe it in this way, I was thinking, and the second thing I was thinking is, Prabhupada says in a purport, that our devotee sees Krishna everywhere. Even if he sees a tree, he thinks about Krishna. If he sees a cloud, to the extent that, I'm not paraphrasing it exactly, but the purport seemed that wherever he sees, even it's as good as not seeing that object, and he just sees Krishna because of his extreme love for Krishna.
Just to respond to that one, do you know Rabindra Sarup Prabhu? You know him? Have you heard his giving classes? He gave an hour and a half class on that particular, sound vibration. Prabhupada, he, as a philosopher, as a PhD student, he heard Prabhupada say that, and he pondered on it for, years. And he has a lot to say about, when the devotee sees the tree, he doesn't just see a tree, he sees Krishna. So what does that mean? It means a lot of things. It's not just, there's Krishna's energy and he's the control of the energy, so he sees Krishna because he sees Krishna's energy. It means more than that. That's like one little slice of the pie. Then there's a big pie. It means a whole bunch of things. So, I'm not going to give an hour and a half class to respond to it, but there's a lot in the life of a devotee. Whatever it is that we, a cloud or a tree or whatever, or something, the changes of the seasons and whatever it is that we see, a traffic jam or whatever it is that we see. All things are under the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and His hand is there. And if His hand's there, He's there. He's there as super soul, guiding. He's within every atom of material existence. At least, as this verse that we read, the person who applies the teaching of the combining of these two, bhakti yoga and mystic yoga practice, the mind fixed upon the Supreme Lord. Mind fixed upon the Supreme Lord, one can see all kinds of things that one whose mind is not fixed upon the Supreme Lord cannot see. He sees the Supreme Lord. And then, the Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochanena verse. Even within everything. Now what does that mean? It sounds like a psychedelic trip or something. You're seeing Krishna everywhere.
Interestingly, Sukadeva Goswami also mentions that in the Bhagavata Maharaj, he says, Sarvam Bhagavat Rupam Akhila. He says, whether he sees this, he sees everything is Bhagavat Rupam, he says.
And then one can ask the question, what does that mean? So, listen to the recording of Rabindra Sarup's class and you get a full panorama of what that means. I think we're done. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.